Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Today, we are joined by Manuel Veth, the area manager for the USA for transfer market. Welcome, Manuel.
Hey, Jordan, how's it going?
Very well, very well. And very grateful for you to join us today. Before we talk too much about transfer market, which is going to be our main topic of conversation and its role in global football as well as Venezuelan football, I'd like to first introduce you. So could you tell us a little bit about your background in football and journalism and your path to where you are now today as an area manager for transfer market?
Oh, wow. How much time do we have?
We have 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's not. I think it all started with me doing a PhD in football and economics and history on Soviet football and Soviet and post-Soviet football. So more of like an Eastern European perspective on the sport and football economics, right? At King's College in London, and more or less by accident fell into a journalism role. It was never really something that I envisioned that I would do, but it just kind of happens, right? When you read about the sport and when you research the sport, then you know, at the time I was often called on by places like the BBC to do expert opinions, and especially during the build-up to the World Cup in Russia, then covered the World Cup in Russia, covered all the build-up of the World Cup, 2017 Confederations Cup as well, right? And around that time, I started writing on German football, and started writing for German football for Forbes. And you know, living in Canada, moving to Canada because my mom is from here. I grew up partly here. Started to cover the Vancouver Whitecaps as well for various outlets. My last one being Pro Soccer USA, and then Transfermarkt kind of headhunted me and asked me if I wanted to do run the North America market for them, because we don't just do US, right? We do Canada, we do all the Canadian leagues, all the US leagues. We do football, cover that in English as well. And then of course, all the North Americans abroad, as I call them, whether they be Canadian, whether they be American, or any other nationality. So yeah, it's been a long bounded path to a great role, because it's one of those really rare full-time jobs in football that just give you a ton of freedom. And it's not just about journalism, but we'll probably get into this, about data scouting, a lot of football economics. So yeah, that's kind of how I got there.
So most people in football will know what transfer market is, but if you were to just quickly describe the website to us and its main functions and why people were so fascinated with the website, how would you describe it?
It's a data page, isn't it? I mean, market values is of course our big trademark, right?
Yeah.
One of the big, but it's just a lot more than that too. The fact that we have, it's over a million players. I think it's 2 million players now that we have in our database. That's the world's largest database for football players. I don't want to say it's a Wikipedia of football. You get the idea. I mean, we rank, I think, in the top five for every single football player on the planet when you search them on Google, right? So we got that, but we not just have the name of the player, we have the full statistics of pretty much every player out there. And if we don't have the statistics yet, we'll get them and we'll find them. And, you know, and that's why we employ people around the world to find us those statistics. So I would say first and foremost, it's a data page, but also of course, it's also, we do news articles. We cover, especially in the big markets, and North America is certainly one of them. We cover the things like the deadline day, like, you know, MLS deadline day, you probably noticed was the last 24 hours, actually ended yesterday, but some transfers are still coming in. So it was a busy day for us then. But Germany, it's a big market in Germany. We have people in Italy. We have people now in South America. Brazil is a big one for us. Argentina is a big one for us. So it's all sorts of things. The big keystone thing that made Transfermarkt what it is today is the market values. The idea that we sort of trying to give players a market value and trying to determine would be worth on an open market with the idea in back of mind that that player is under contract, right? So, which is why we don't give free agents zero market value. So yeah, that's essentially it. It's a data page with a big focus on transfer, very much, much more than that.
And what's incredible about transfer market that I've witnessed more and more in the past 12 months when I've been speaking to players and clubs and even agents is just how much it's not just respected, but also trusted. It's got, I've read that gets 1 billion page views per month, making it one of the world's largest football websites. Its valuations of players are used by clubs in negotiations, by scouts in appraisals. And I even read there's been transfer market values used in court cases to defend accusations of inflation of player values by agents. It's incredible. And if you type transfer market into Google, the most common question that's asked is, how accurate is transfer market? So to put that question to you, how accurate is Transfermarkt and how do you ensure that level of accuracy that you have?
Well, first of all, I want to point out that we don't encourage people to use it for court cases. if they want to, that's up to them, right? We're not going to say that that's what we strive for. There has been studies done on this, and we're about 0.93 accurate when it comes to transfers for players that receive the transfer fee. And I mean, this is important to point out, right? Because when a player moves for nothing, a free transfer, I mean, famous example is now going to be Lionel Messi, who is going to be the most valuable player by market value to move on a free transfer. Some people might argue, well, you got that wrong. His market value, that's not our point. We're just trying to determine how much a player of his stature would be worth if he was under contract, right? So when transfer fees are involved, we are pretty good. 93 is pretty accurate. You know, that's 93% accurate. And I would say most statisticians would probably take that. I think that's pretty good. There's some that say it's a bit lower. You know, you follow certain studies, they say it's 70, some say it's 80%. Even that is still pretty good.
Yeah.
So I would say our market values, we're not always right. And we have to adjust, and we do adjust when we see the market change, which is, I think, normal. That's no different than any other consultancy company or out there does it, right? Mm-hmm. But I think we're pretty good. We are not bad at sort of determining what the market value of a player is.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I'm not pitching for a job for Transfermarkt, but quite interestingly, in January, I was indirectly asked to recommend a striker for an English championship team for the 2021-22 season that, you know, kicks off next week. And I recommended the Venezuelan striker, Eric Ramirez, who at the time was playing in the Slovakian Super League. And they liked him and they asked me what I thought he'd cost. And I said, this was in January, and I said, I think 1 to 3 million. And they actually questioned my valuation by quoting Transfermarkt, saying, well, he's only worth 630,000 on Transfermarkt. Why do you think 1 to 3 million? And then on June the 26th, several months later, Transfermarkt updated his market value to 1.8 million. And then a month later, Dynamo Kiev bought him, and Transfermarkt have the fee down as 1.58 million. So like you said, that 0.9 or so accuracy. I just found that, personally quite satisfying that I was predicting the summer fee for him and then got, you know, pretty close. Obviously, I gave quite a wide window of 1 to 3 million, but that was before Copa America and not knowing if he was going to play.
Every once in a while, something like that happens. I mean, I feel really proud. I just updated, we just updated. It's not just me. There's many, you know, I'm the final, one of the final people to put it in the system. But Gianluca Busio, you know, we just went to $6.6 million or 6 million euros. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the base fee he went for Tunisia just now. And, you know, with bonuses, of course, that could rise to 10 million. And that's probably something that it's going to reflect in his market value further down the line. But, you know, when you see something like that happening, you're like, yeah, you know, we got that right. We pretty much got it bang on. Of course, then the question is, what came first, the chicken or the egg, right? Did he set the market value on those teams sat down and that's what they negotiated? You know, I'm not a fly on the wall. I can't tell. But yeah, we seem to be getting a lot of things right. So yeah.
And I read that Christian Schwartz, who's Chance Markets International Head of Market Values, or was at the time of me reading this article, said that clubs shouldn't make transfer decisions based on the figures on our website, as our method is not scientific. But it does, well, it's obvious that the clubs and agents are using your numbers. When we see in the press in general, maybe on, you know, Sky Sports News or The Guardian, clubs signing players but the fee is undisclosed, does Transfer Market have a particular way? I know you said off of camera before we start recording that, you know, nothing's a state secret, but do Transfer Market have their ways of finding out how much transfers cost when fees aren't publicly disclosed?
Well, some of us are journalists. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
you broke up a little bit. What did you say?
I said some of us on working for Transfermarkt, including myself, lots of contacts in the game, and we ask, and sometimes we find out either from club sources, agent sources, other sources in the game. Look, Jordan, I think you probably know this, but football likes to take itself more serious than it is 100%. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. And I give you a great example that was announced today. A big Major League Soccer team was involved. They signed a big name Brazilian player. And if you listen to this, you can probably figure out who it was. But I asked them straight up, and I already knew the fee. And I asked him straight up, like, how long is this contract? And they're like, my contact said, like, sorry, we can't tell you. It's a bit of a state secret. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But you know, we're going to find out. Like, someone is going to tell us.
Yeah.
Later. Like, I might not know today, but, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks or maybe a few months from now, it will come out.
Yeah.
And I always find that it's almost like a game. And sometimes I find it a little bit silly. You know what I loved is... what Aston Villa did after Jack Grealish was sold to Manchester City, and I can't remember his name entirely, the president of the club came on, the American owner, and he just explained it.
Yeah.
Super, super transparent about it. And sometimes I think it would be almost better if we handled it that way. But it is what it is. And yes, when we find out transfer fees, and you have to be careful about them, because like sometimes a source will tell us like, oh, it was around 10 million, right?
Yeah.
So, and then sometimes some clubs release it. You know, if you list it on the stock exchange, and some Brazilian clubs, that's the case, and Germany, that's the case, they release the figure. And then, of course, that's how we get it. But we usually end up getting it one way or another.
Yeah, and I guess it's an indication of the reputation that Transfermarkt's built up in its 20, 21 years of existence that... Mm-hmm. means that you're quoted by the likes of The Guardian and Sky Sports News and Marca and clubs, not just clubs, sorry, but the press around the world often use Transfer Markets figures. But what from a Venezuelan perspective, thinking of Liga Futve and the data available on the league, on the website, I found it quite interesting to read that Nick Kirsten, who at the time of the article that I read, was the head scout and deputy director at Nijmegen in Holland, said that every scout is addicted to Transfermarkt. It's the website mm-hmm. he uses the most. And if a new player is offered to his club, all he needs to know is his Transfermarkt profile. My personal opinion on that, purely from a Venezuelan perspective, is that is dangerous. What's your opinion on that comment in particular?
Yeah, I think this is the Dutch article that you're quoting, right?
Yes.
That's an article that I think you have to take a little bit of a grain of salt, because we actually worked with them on it. And when they came to work with us, we actually saw that we had to them and worked with us and actually explain it to them. And they came for a visit, and it's what we agreed on and what we chatted to them about was not quite represented and say it that way. And it is, you know, for us and our perspective, it was a bit disappointing that way, because we were super transparent about it, as in terms of player profiles.
Yeah,
100%. You're 100% right. I mean, I get requests all the time from people asking me to put a player, give them a profile and put them into our database. And sometimes, you know, this will be someone who's like, you know, a player who plays in the fifth division in the United States. It's like, why doesn't he have a profile? I'm like, look, I mean, these when a player profile, A, takes time to put together.
Yeah.
And B, we can't have every league in the world as a player profile. And then, you know, I hear exactly what you just said. It's like, oh, well, how am I going to get him? How am I going to sell him if he doesn't have a Transfermarkt profile? Well, we did not generate this. We did not set out and say, look, in order for you to be sold, you need to have a Transfermarkt profile. I think what people have to understand sometimes is that football clubs are operated by human beings, and human beings, we all tend to quickly head to Google and search a player. And if they can't find the player, he doesn't exist, right? That's the life that we live in. And not every club does their due diligence and actually scout and goes deep and scouts a league or a club or a player and finds the talent themselves. They rely on whether it's us on Transfermarkt or whether it's VScout or any other database out there to kind of do the work for them. And all I can say to that is that it is paramount for any football club to do their homework.
Yeah.
And no football club in the world should just rely on Transfermarkt. If I run a football club, I'd be looking, okay, he has a profile. That's great. We should still scout him. And by the way, we have a scouting platform that we have brought on the market. It's called Scoutastic, where you can scout these players and give them your own evaluation. So I just want to point that out right there.
Uh-huh.
If we don't have a profile for him, that doesn't stop a club from going to the training pitch and watch him play. So, you know, I agree with you. It's problematic, but at the same time, I also say that also kind of doesn't speak well for how many football teams conduct their scouting in the first place.
Yeah, and I also, just for transparency and clarity on my end, my experience when it's come to talking to people about Transfermarkt, it's often agents or recruiters that are heavily relying on Transfermarkt rather than clubs, to the point where, you know, I've been asked for recommendations of players in particular positions, and like you pointed out, sometimes the reply is, oh, I couldn't find them on Transfermarkt, or they say, oh, he's on Transfermarkt, but it shows that he's only played 5 games, which sort of brings me on to my next point. I have used Transfermarkt ever since I've been writing about football, so 11 years now, and, you know, I remember being at secondary school, I didn't have the internet at home when I first started secondary school. So I remember, like, if it was raining outside on my lunch break and I couldn't play football, I'd be sat in front of Transfermarkt looking at, you know, building my dream teams and, you know, giving each other budgets and making our ultimate 11 and, you know, the kind of things you do when football's the most important thing to you in the world. But now, being like invested in Venezuelan football so much, if I'm asked about a Venezuelan player, I will tend to use Soccerway as a reference point, because the stats in terms of games played, minutes and goals can sometimes be more up to date than Transfermarkt. But the impressive thing about Transfermarkt, I read, is that you probably only employ fewer than 100 people, but you have an army of data collectors and researchers that are doing this voluntarily. So to have the accuracy that Transfermarkt has across the whole world is incredibly impressive. For Venezuela, what can you tell us about how the data is collected for Liga Footbay?
Yeah, I mean, so this is actually quite transparent. If you have an account in Transfermarkt, and everyone can get an account in Transfermarkt, and you're logged in, you can actually see where the data scout is for the respective league. And we have one data scout for Venezuela, and data scouts update the league pretty much all the time, you know, after every match day at least. We are not at a stage yet where we do regular market value updates for Venezuela. That doesn't mean it's not happening, right? It just does leagues that ones that where we pay tons of attention to. Major League Soccer is such an example. We do 3 market value updates a year, and then there could be actually additional ones depending on whether there was a major tournament, like the Copa America, etc. I can tell you that for Venezuela, like any country in South America, the ambition is that we pay the same amount of attention to it than we do to the major leagues around the world. And, you know, as I said, it's all done by people. And some of these people are volunteers or do this part-time. A lot of people do this part-time, including the famous teacher that was quoted in the Dutch article that we spoke about earlier. In that case, we're actually no different than football teams. You know, we'll employ part-time scouts to scout players. But it is human effort, and human effort takes time. And we are lucky enough that for some of, or most leagues, or many big leagues, we have Opta as a data partner who, you know, can right away give us the data on certain games. One example is the Canadian Premier League, where Opta gives us the data right away, and then we go in if we need to update the data maybe the next day or even that evening, depending on the time zone. So I don't think Opta is involved, and that's still all done by hand. But you know what, Jordan, I heard you say earlier that you are relying on Soccerway to get the up-to-date stuff for the Venezuelan League. And our ambition is totally to ensure that you don't need to use another platform than Transfermarkt, because like that's what we want to do ultimately, is to be the ultimate data platform and have the detail for every league, right? Yeah. But yeah, at the moment we have just one data scout for that competition. And that person, I think, is doing actually quite a good job, considering, you know, that the league has only been really under full-time data scout for, I think, a year. So yeah, but I get it. It's the minute details that is sometimes still lacking.
Yeah, with what I find interesting is like Transfermarkt has been around for 20, 21 years now. And in that time, a lot of other football websites have come and gone. And I was just wondering, since the prevalence of Yscout predominantly, but also Instat, have you found what your users want from Transfermarkt varying at all? Because a lot of journalists, you know, Yscout is obviously not free, but is fairly accessible to the average person, whereas Instat is not like a publicly available tool. It's aimed at professionals. Have you found the rise of these like scouting tools influencing what Transfermarkt it has to produce in as a result of demand?
I think it's we're in so many markets now, and it really depends on the market. I think, you know, me working in, I'll give you an example. We first expanded to United Kingdom, and we find it incredibly difficult to break into breaking news sector in the United Kingdom because it has such an established news world for British football, doesn't it? And whereas in the United States, it's still a very young market, and the news articles and the in-depth research and the pieces like interviews and etc. And it's very accessible here, right? So and more similar to Germany in a way, funnily enough, where, you know, we were also very established, not just as a data source, but also as a news source. So it really depends on the market, and every market is so very different. And, you know, in Brazil, for example, a lot of attention is paid to social media posts for Transfermarkt to give people the quick data that we have via a quick post. And it's very interesting how as a page, as a soccer specific page, that's not just in one country, but in pretty much every country in the world now, and it's expanding into all these different markets, it's very hard to say what the consumer wants, right? I do think that we, for a time, we went into very detailed stats and in-depth stats, and that seemed to be the, you know, in-depth analytics.
Yeah.
Like you have it in other sports, but I think we're now kind of going towards maybe a little bit away from that, because in-depth analytics in soccer are very different than in-depth analytics are in other sports. You know, it's very hard to compare in-depth analytics in soccer with hockey, for example. Or no, hockey is actually really similar. Sorry, I mean, let me use another sport, basketball or American football or baseball, which leads the way in analytics, right? So it's an interesting one, really, because like I can't really answer that question whether the consumer has changed, because so many different consumers and consumer habits around the world are so different. I personally love stats. I love in-depth stats. And whenever I can, I incorporate them into my features. But I also find that sometimes people just like to have the human element of sides of things. So sometimes, you know, and this is what we just want to know how much a rare player has come from, how many games he's played and how much he cost, and whether or not he was more expensive than anyone else that they have ever bought. You know, so it's very interesting and it varies. And I think where Transfermarkt has been very solid is that it has been a very strong basic analytical tool, like nothing super in-depth, but basic. You get exactly what you want and you get it quick, right? With a quick Google search. And I think that's actually something that's really, that hasn't really changed. And then everything else is just around the edges where we're trying to really hit the different consumer markets.
Yeah, and I think it's testament to Transfermarkt's you know, reputation and power, I guess, ultimately, that if you Google a football player's name, the Transfermarkt page is, if it's not the top result on Google, it's going to be the second or third, which is, you know, exceptional, because you're either going to go on Wikipedia and read the you know, story about the player, or you're going to go on Transfermarkt and see the numbers about the player. And I know you said earlier in the podcast, it's not exactly correct to say the Wikipedia of football, but it is certainly up there as it's a part of a player's profile, isn't it? It's a part of the product of a player. You have their Instagram, their Twitter, their Transfermarkt, their Wikipedia. That off the pitch, they're the four things that clubs, recruiters, agents are going to be looking at, which is amazing for, like I said earlier, a company that is ultimately maybe 100 employees and then thousands of volunteers. To talk about Venezuelan football a little bit more, but to link it to your area of expertise as the area manager for the North America, quite a few Venezuelan players have gone to MLS in the past 12 months. And just using this opportunity to say thank you for linking Footvay English in your piece on Freddy Vargas going to Dallas. Much appreciated. But how have you been receiving the Venezuelan players in MLS? Do you think these players are making the transition well and are opening the door to more Venezuelan players going to MLS or the ever-growing USL?
I mean, I think it's actually a really interesting market for Major League Soccer, right? You have, actually, let me just pull up the stat, because we have a stat of exactly how many Venezuelans are in the league, and it's 19. That's 4.3% of the foreign share, and it's the sixth most foreigners in Major League Soccer. Wow. And of course, you have Josef Martinez at the very top. He unfortunately just received the market value downgrade from us because, you know, didn't have the best of years. We got Jefferson Soteldo just arrived in the league, right? And I know in Toronto, they were very excited about him. So that's two of the biggest stars in the league are really from Venezuela. And I think what makes Venezuela very interesting, and I remember reading an article about that a few years ago, and I think it might've even been quoted in your book as well, that Venezuela was sort of the new untapped market in many ways, right? Where you could go in and find players still to a reasonable good price in comparison to Argentina or Brazil, and you know, find talent there. And I think Major League Soccer, I mean, the trend has been very much that Major League Soccer is heavily recruiting in South America now. You know, they they're one of the leagues that are spending the most. And, you know, in the winter transfer window, they spend more than any of the big European leagues. And, you know, South America is a very important market for them. And I think they know Venezuela as a market very well. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it's one that we have to keep a close eye on. And of course, with Josef Martínez, the biggest star of the league, being from there, and hopefully regaining his form, because we all love how he plays, right? And yeah, the goals that he gets. And I think the league very much is aware of the market. And Jefferson Soteldo as well, where now that he's in Toronto, I mean, that's the sort of player the league wouldn't have gotten a few years ago. But now they can, right? Because of the strong dollar and the market power that they have. And it's an interesting one, I find.
Yeah, and he was probably not on the doorstep of transfer market, but the doorstep of the Brazilian economy, but also the financial situation at Santos. He's probably undervalued in the sense of what Toronto actually had to pay to get him. How for MLS in particular, as your area of expertise, what are the biggest influences on the player's market value? Obviously, their ability is one, but perhaps not the main one, because perhaps the profile of the league is more important. But as the expert, what factors would you say influence this?
Well, first of all, it's not just me. It's lots of people. You said thousands. Actually, it's in the millions of people that have influence on market values. So, you know, that's how our hive mind works.
Yeah.
We have, of course, people who are, unlike what the Dutch article said, people who are fully paid are the ones that make the final decisions, not someone who's just sitting and doing this hobby. There's several factors. And I mean, we do this as a text, again, for transparency. We put it as a text now under every market value update that we do. There's a little blurb and it is with a link to a page that actually explains in exact detail how we do it. But you're quite right. Ability is not the number one factor, or not the only number one factor. Because if it was just to ability, then if for all eternity, Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo would have to be the most valuable players on the earth, right?
Yeah.
And for their squad and what they bring in ability-wise, they are. I think Barcelona are going to find us out the hard way very soon. But the reality is also that they are both in their late 30s. So you're not going to get the same price for a 34-year-old Messi than you would get for a 20-year-old Messi, right? So age is a factor. A younger player will always be worth more than an older player if they have the same ability. It's the same thing if you buy a new car, and it's just the same car. If you buy a used car, it will always be cheaper than a new car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a commodity, right? And I mean, this sounds horrible, so please don't butcher me on this, but in the end of the day, you're buying an asset for your club.
Yeah.
And you have to treat it that well. There is also, of course, what market are you in? A beautiful house in Vancouver will be more expensive than the same beautiful house than, I don't know, to give you another example, somewhere in North America, Regina in Saskatchewan. I hope if there's someone listening from Saskatchewan, I'm sure your province is gorgeous, but you're not in Vancouver. The Vancouver market is always going to be more valuable. If you live in England, the same house in London is always going to be more expensive than the same house in Manchester because of the market that you're in. So when you take this into football terms, a player of the same equal caliber playing in the German Bundesliga will not have the same market value than the same player playing in the Premier League, because the Premier League is hyperinflated with the television deal, and there is a Premier League tax. Everyone knows this, right? So those are all factors that play into it, right? And then of course, we know how much a market is willing to pay for a certain player. We find this stuff out. And when we find this stuff out, we make the adjustment accordingly. Or we know that a certain nationality is more valuable than others. I mean, a great example is current United States players who are going way more frequently from the United States to Europe than, for example, Mexicans. That doesn't mean players from the United States on average are better than Mexicans, but they're A, more willing to make the step, right? And B, they're bringing eyeballs to that particular team on a very different level than the Mexican would.
Yeah.
And that's I'm not downing on Mexicans here. I think, when you have signed a Mexican, we had We had Chicharito in Leverkusen, for example. We have him now at the LA Galaxy. But it was actually interesting that the markets that Leverkusen conquered the most with was Mexicans, but most of those Mexicans were in the United States, right? So those are all factors that play a huge role in the determination of a market value. And you can't tell me that, you know, when a team can buy a Canadian and a Brazilian and they look at those two players, the Brazilian will always cost more. I remember when Bayern Munich bought Alphonso Davies for $10 million and Real Madrid signed in the same year Vinicius for, I think, $45 million. And now in retrospect, I think that Bayern definitely got the better deal, right? But that's because Davies was a player playing in Major League Soccer, a Canadian, and not someone that a lot of people knew about. So that's the kind of stuff that plays a role now. Now, of course, everyone knows Canada. I think everyone is scouting Canada now because they're all looking for the next Alphonso Davies. So the paradigm might have shifted a little bit, but those are all important factors.
Absolutely. And your answer has given me another question, which I hope perhaps you're willing to answer, not as a transfer market employee, but perhaps your own opinion. Because I found that answer, yeah, very, very interesting and food for thought, really. So just with your own expertise and your own opinions and your own understanding of football, what would you say, with presumably a limited or small knowledge of Liga Footvay, what would you say a league such as Venezuela's could do to improve the values that its players have in a practical sense? I say that because it's obviously it's a small league in a global sense, and also for the values that many of the players have, like you say, with the comparison between Vinicius and Alphonso Davies, is perhaps not reflective of their true worth or true ability. So what advice or what tips do you think you could give a league to maybe improve the worth of its players?
You need to be in the spotlight. I think that's really what it comes down to. This was not like story quite well, and I know the people that work with him very well, and so I don't want to say it that way, but he played in a league that at the right time when people were starting to pay attention to, and you know, he was in many ways a trendsetter. I think we will not have Gianluca Busio, or you will not have Tyler Adams and all the other guys going from Major League Soccer to Europe without Davies doing it first, right? And so I don't want to say Venezuela needs a Davies, but it needs to be able to be on a platform where it's easy for people to spot the talent available in the league. And, you know, the number one thing that comes to mind for me is the Copa Libertadores, right? Yeah. You need to do well in that competition. I mean, Davies at the time when he scouted, he was 15 and he was playing CONCACAF Champions League because the Whitecaps were actually quite good domestically just before he broke into the first team and won the Canadian Championship. We're the best team in Canada to in MLS. That was enough for that one time they qualified for CONCACAF Champions League. So he was playing against bigger teams, against Mexican teams, against other teams from the United States. And, you know, that gave him sort of a platform, and it gave his club more opportunity to let him play as well, right? Because they let him play as a 15-year-old in that competition. And this is something that we have to remember. He was playing against men at an age when most of us, they could barely read a book, right? Yeah. So it's. I think that's really what it comes down to, is you have to be visible. And visibility is everything. And, I mean, Venezuela, how has Venezuela become a hotbed for baseball? You know, when you look at Major League Baseball, they scout heavily there and recruit heavily there. And I from what I remember reading, a lot of baseball players go down there to play, to stay fit or try to make the next step.
Yeah, because the seasons don't really overlap. I think they end
right.
Baseball players play,
and you can actually make decent money there, right? So But it's a good example. So how have they managed to do it? And I think that's really what it comes down to. You need to be visible in this market. There's so many good players out there. And it's always kind of shocks me how many players get overlooked. And there's a new league that we have here in Canada now called the Canadian Premier League. And it's probably the best thing that happened to soccer in this country, because before the Canadian Premier League, and I'm going to, you know, take a long way around and come back to the actual topic. So stay with me here. Before the Canadian Premier League, there was only three teams really that were recruiting Canadian talent, right? The Vancouver Whitecaps, the Toronto FC, and Montreal Impact, now known as Club de Foot Montreal.
Yeah.
And they, Vancouver has in the region of 2,000 academies spread across the country. Ultimately, they can only have a squad of about, I mean, the current squad is 30 players, right? And they have quite a lot of Canadians in that squad. But that means there's a lot of Canadians that if they don't make that step right away, they fall through the cracks. And we were very fortunate that the Canadian Premier League project came about, and they have 8 teams now, including one here in Victoria, where I live, called Pacific FC. It's a very well-run club. They're now first in the league. And I watched my first game back in stadium actually this week. It was my first game back being allowed back into the stadium because of COVID rules are quite strict in Canada. And I was impressed by the level of play. And a lot of those players are Vancouver Whitecap products, you know, players that have previously fallen through the crack. They were not visible. And, you know, because they didn't make the Vancouver Whitecaps roster at 16, 17, 18, and there was no other opportunity to play, maybe other than going on loan somewhere in a lower division in Europe, you know, Eastern Europe or Scandinavia or something like that, the visibility was quite low. Now, there's a second path of opportunity for them, and they have a national TV contract, and those teams as of next year will be straight into CONCACAF Champions League, right? Because the league is doing quite well.
Yeah.
It gives them visibility, and you see them play, and they're now going to play the Vancouver Whitecaps in the first round of the Canadian Championship versus the Canadian Cup, right? And they probably have a good chance of beating them looking at the two forms. And scouts will be watching. And it comes back to answer your question about what can Venezuela do to get people to get those market values up and bring up attention is to put eyeballs on the game there, put eyeballs on the talent available, because the talent is there. Every country has talent. You know, Canada is, there's a ton of parallels between Canada and Venezuela, that it has an enormous amount of untapped talent, right? Because there was no professional league below MLS until about 3 years ago. And tapping up that talent is important, but giving the talent visibility is the next step, because the scouts, and we talked about this earlier, scouts and clubs, you know, clubs that employ the scouts, they're not always the most proactive. They will go on Transfermarkt, they will look at the player profile, it's like, oh, he doesn't have a profile, he doesn't exist. So they will not drive down or fly over or, you know, watch the video of the player, and the talent is lost. And I think that's really what it comes down to. If you want to increase the profile of a league, you have to get eyeballs on it. And that means being competitive in international fixtures. That means having a TV contract, selling the league abroad, making it a product worth watching. Because if you make it a product worth watching, people will watch it and they will discover the players and the talents that are in that league.
Yeah, and the visibility is the main takeaway from what you've said there. And I very much agree. And with Liga Footvee this season, every game so far, and the intention is for that to remain the same, every game has been televised and for free on Gold TV. It's available to watch on TV in Venezuela, but also online streaming and the Gold TV app around the world, with the exception of the US. So viewers all around the world can see it. Also has an official partnership with Instat, the scouting platform. So all the games of Liga Footvee are on Instat, normally within 48 hours as well. And, you know, also not just the games, but the games have been analysed and broken down into, you know, action stages, if you like. So I'm hoping that for the growth of Venezuelan football, the transfer values that clubs can get for those players that are
you know, born and bred in Venezuela can increase, and obviously that money then be invested back into Liga Futve and private academies too, because a lot of the players in Venezuela are produced up until the age of 16 or 17 by private academies and then make the step into professional clubs, historically with little provision or protection for those private academies. One player that I'm interested about this summer in particular for Venezuela is Yangel Herrera. Manchester City signed him from Atletico Venezuela in 2017. He's yet to play a competitive game for Manchester City. He's been on a series of loans, first to New York City, then Huesca and La Liga, then Granada for two seasons as well. But it looks like he's set for a permanent move this summer, either to a La Liga club, but more likely to a Premier League club. We've been told that Crystal Palace are in the strongest position. This information, by the time the podcast goes out, will be about 10 days old. But we said Crystal Palace are supposedly in the strongest position, followed by West Ham, Leeds, and Southampton, my own team. How did I forget? So, yes. And if Yangel Herrera does sell for his supposed market value of 20 million is the quote, but on transfer market, I think he's valued a little less. Atletico Venezuela are set for 25% of that, which would make him the biggest transfer in the history of Venezuelan football. I've been informed that at the moment it's around 2.2 million, and that was for Vargas, who went from Caracas FC to Club Bruges around 10 years ago. So this could be a big summer for Venezuelan football in terms of breaking transfer records. And we saw in January, Dani Perez go to Club Bruges, again, Club Bruges, for $250,000. That was his release fee clause, and Club Bruges were happy to pay for it. But we often see Venezuelan players go for, like with Yangel Herrera, go for a lower upfront fee and then a sell-on in the future. And it's, I think, one big step Venezuela can make is by making the step from exporting their players to other South American countries and perhaps including MLS to exporting them directly to Europe. So they're the ones that are making, you know, probably the move where the bulk of the money is in exporting their players to Europe.
Yeah, I, you know, and to maybe add to that, I mean, you see it, right? I mean, when you look at the page, Matias Lacava is one that's just moved to Santos.
Yes.
So, yeah, absolutely. And to get to those other markets is hugely important. But I think it's also the competition within the league that is a big one. Angela Herrera is an interesting sample too, because of course Manchester City is one of those clubs that tend to sign lots of players. I mean, they signed a bunch of Brazilians in this market, and including, or the City Group rather, I guess we have to call them now with that rather than just a club. And
yeah,
you know, they're taking bets on lots of players and then moving them around to the various subsidiaries. And, you know, if it doesn't work out for the main club, they move them and sell them on for transfer profit after that, which then, of course, it does trickle down because of the various mechanisms that you mentioned. But yeah, it is an interesting one. And I think it's always hard to say when a market is on the cusp of making that next step, right? And to really explode. And often it comes, you know, in concert with the league doing well, the national team doing well, but it's always, you know, gets back to this quote earlier, what came first, the chicken or the egg, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we know in other markets that had difficulties, and North America is a great example for that. The moment you bring in a competitive national league, over time, the competitiveness of the respective national teams also rises, which then brings more eyeballs and more desire from teams abroad that have the big money to sign these players. And I think that's maybe the next step that you have to look at, is where is Venezuela at as a national team? And I know this Copa America was extremely difficult. I think 18 positive COVID tests on the eve of the tournament,
yeah,
including for Josef Martinez. And it's a good Copa America performance could go a long way to change the market forever.
Yeah. And they're, you know, a lot of people say that Venezuela currently have a golden generation, a core of that being the players that got to the final of the under 20 World Cup in 2017, but also mixed with the older heads of, you know, Thomas Rincon, Salomon Rondon and Roberto Rosales are, you know, perhaps qualifying for Qatar is their last chance of a World Cup. But then you've still got, you know, Josef Martinez in his late 20s and others of a similar age that were going to be around for 4 or 5 more years. But that undercurrent of Wulka Fariñez and Jefferson Soteldo and now Dani Perez and Eric Ramirez a year or two under them is really promising for the future of Venezuelan football. Manuel, that is all we have time for. And thank you very much for joining us today. It's an honour to have somebody from Transfer Market come on and speak so openly. So again, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Hopefully we will speak again soon.
Definitely.